So now to spark discussion, I take the other side. In my talk, I frame the future of anthropology through the lens of hope. I start with a short vignette from my field, and then I will sketch out three ways for anthropology to build on hope. When I first arrived in Muranayan, a small Dayak Benuak village in eastern Borneo in the year 2004, the situation seemed hopeless. The village forest had been cut down to make room for oil palm plantations, and my field gardens had been burned by severe forest fires. The village's various attempts to resist had proven unsuccessful. The landscape I saw was thus characterized by environmental decline, increasing pollution, and deforestation, just like you see on this picture. The large majority of the villagers made a living by working on the newly established oil palm plantations because they had no other options left under precarious conditions. Having become dependent day laborers on land which they had previously cultivated as independent farmers led to a shared feeling of frustration. This atmosphere of despair and the image of a radically altered landscape resembles what Sherry Ortner has described as dark anthropology, an anthropology that grew in response to the rapid global spread of neoliberalism, and I quote her, as a new and more brutal form of capitalism that emphasizes the harsh and brutal dimensions of human experience, end of quote. Now, my return to Muranayan 13 years later in 2017 revealed a very different situation. The village was now brimming with enthusiasm for the future. The major reason for this change is the regained self-reliance of the villagers. The large majority of the households is currently making a living from rubber tapping, and some even start to grow their own oil palm gardens and to experiment with intercropping oil palms. The devastated landscape, which characterized the village in 2004, has, at least partially, recovered, and the villagers have, by replanting their rubber gardens, managed to become independent farmers again. So now, this is not a story of a doomed village community that managed to shake off the evils haunting it and which is now living happily ever after. The situation in Muranayan continues to be characterized by great uncertainties. What the unextended twist of the story shows, though, is the great potential that lies in hope, or as Arjuna Padurai has called it, the capacity to aspire, which can be understood as the ability to think of alternative futures and to develop strategies to put them into practice. During the recent years, a braid anthropology emerged, building on works that explore, for example, morality, well-being, empathy, care, happiness, and last but not least, hope. Most commonly, hope is defined as a longing for something, and the confidence that its fulfillment is not promised, but possible. However, hope is not only a major driver for activism. Hope can also have tranquilizing and disempowering effects. Just as already mentioned by Sandra, Donna Haraway identifies two major responses to global environmental crisis. On the one hand, she sees a naive belief that new technological innovations will somehow just rescue us all. On the other hand, there is a destructive pessimism, a feeling that the game's over, it doesn't make any sense to do anything anymore. Although both these attitudes are opposed, they both excuse us from acting and lead to a standstill that simply protects the status quo. When I talk here about hope, I do not mean this naive belief in techno fixes. My focus lies on the empowering notion of hope, which is closely linked to action and which allows us to imagine that, in the words of Rebecca Solnit, in the spaciousness of uncertainty, there is room to act. I view the emergence of great anthropology thus as an important counterbalance to still dominant accounts of dark anthropology. While dark anthropology grew in reaction to neoliberalist globalization, bright anthropology emerges now in the face of manifold political, social, and environmental crises, upholding the possibility that there are better, in the meaning of less violent, less unequal, and less destructive ways to live than those which are documented by dark anthropology. This renewed interest in hope and the things that people strive for resonates very well with anthropology's recent shift towards the future. Studying the imaginations and aspirations that people have for the future and how this informs their actions in the present reveals a great heterogeneity. People cherish diverse and conflicting hopes, and they have very different means at hand to put their aspirations into practice. While some hope to integrate all palms into a diverse smallholder economy, others perceive large-scale monocultures as the realization of modern agriculture. While some people imagine inclusive societies and open borders, others aspire authoritarian discipline and stricter border regimes. The empirical inquiry into this diversity of hopes places hope as an ethnographic category for critical analysis, as it is proposed by several scholars, like, for example, Nauja Kleist and Steph Jansen. It provides us with the insight that actions aimed at achieving what is considered as good and desirable can also reproduce relations of structural violence and power. Researching specific hopes of specific people in particular contexts contributes thus differently to anthropological thinking. Instead of providing a counterweight to ethnographies of suffering, it provides a middle ground where dark and bright anthropology can unite to investigate a whole diversity of hopes aiming at different ends and to explore the entanglements in webs of power and inequality. This enables us, as Sherry Ortner has put it, to be at the same time realistic about the ugly realities of the world and hopeful about the possibilities of changing them. Turning towards hope and making various possible and often highly contested futures the subject of ethnographic inquiry raises the question which role we, be it as individual researchers, be it as instructors, or as an entire intellectual community, want and can play in currently ongoing processes of future making. And here I see a remarkable change in the self-perception of our discipline. After undergoing various crises that resulted in repeated proclamations of the end of anthropology, anthropologists currently show a growing positive attitude towards the potential of our discipline, and many voices reclaim its political edge. Nobody for sure believes that anthropology can solve all problems of humanity. However, many inspiring initiatives currently aim at finding new ways of applied public or activist engagement, and this has been very much mirrored in several panels and presentations already in this conference. And there is an increasing awareness that anthropology holds methods, perspectives, and abilities that can contribute to imagine and also to shape more just, more caring, more equal, more inclusive futures. This includes, among others, the ability to understand complexity, the ability to question what is taken for granted, and I think what has been stressed by all of us in this panel today, the ability to imagine alternatives, to think about how the otherwise than actual could look like. Taking a more active stance in current processes of future making challenges us then to think and to rethink the way we teach our students and how we train young anthropologists so that they feel well equipped to write for and to speak to different audiences, that they feel encouraged to apply their skills in a variety of fields, and that they are aware of the rewards as well as the quandaries of activist engagement. For the moment, I close here with stressing that I do not want to make anthropology more optimistic about the world, but I envision an anthropology that is more hopeful about the potential that it has to overcome both naive optimism as well as overly destructive pessimism.